It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will. But then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Greetings from the chair.
I was going to ask about that.
The chair has arrived.
So this is replacing what was previously sitting there in your living room? Oh, it moves very slowly.
It really does.
Does it help you get out of the chair too, or is it just reclining that it does?
Oh, it does a lot of things.
But before, in that spot, you had was it a couch or what was it?
I don't know why you're trying to explain or ask questions as if I am not going to go into, frankly, annoyingly detailed explanation.
I ask questions. That's what I do. That's like the thing. That's my thing.
20 some years ago.
Oh.
Trisha and I bought a love seat couch. It was the first major purchase we did together.
Oh, love seat.
We called it the Twiglet couch because it was very much colored similarly to our cat Twiglet at the time. In our new home, which I think we bought it technically before we moved in here, but just barely. In here, it has been where I sit in the family room. We would love like a big couch we could both fit on. And in fact, when we go on vacation rentals, we love that because we can like cuddle up and stuff like that. It just doesn't work in this room. Like, we've tried to sort of map it out a few times. So we each have our own separate couches. And I had that love seat, and Trish had an old couch she had inherited from her family. And eventually that one went to shit, and we bought her what they call a chair and a half, which to me just looks like a love seat, but it only has the one cushion. And so she still sits in that, and actually she mostly sits on an angle, sort of laying across it like a couch. And I had that one. And after that many years, I switched sides and I put things in it. It was not doing it. And it was in particular really bad on my back. Cause I sit on the couch a lot, and it just, you know, things were angled and there wasn't a lot of support. And so it was not a good time for me. And so for a while, we've been saying, I need to get something else. But since I only sit by myself, we're like, let's get a chair. So around 1 or 2 years ago, I don't know, it was in late fall, either last year or the year before, mm-hmm. One night, I think it was a date night, and we happened to be near where the Lazy Boy store was. So we went to the Lazy Boy store and learned, after so many years, chair technology has improved. Mm-hmm. And there are all sorts of things. And one of the things we discovered is they make big ones that will fit like me. And then they also had models that were electronic, mm-hmm. that I shit you not have a remote. And I sat in it and was like, this is hilarious. First of all, I was like, who needs a remote? It clips into the side and just works as buttons, but apparently for some people. And like, it's got like, weirdly, it didn't come with instructions, so I'm just gonna sort of figure it out. But it has two memory settings where like everything will be adjusted just right away. But this is not my thing at all. This is not the kind of thing I wanted. I was making fun of it at the time. And then I found out one of the adjustable features is a lumbar support.
Mm.
Which, for those of you with bad backs, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's your low back. That's where the problems lie. And this has a thing that you can adjust it to not really supporting at all, to like really like you're kind of arched like this support and everything in between. And I was like, oh shit, I have to get this. We were like, this is awesome. They didn't have anything there at the time, but we're like, you know, we'd have to special order it. And I'm like, well, okay, we'll figure it out. We'll get back to you, because it's also what has advanced over 20 years is the cost. Much more expensive than even we imagined it would be. So we're like, we will get back to you. And then a year, or possibly two, just fucking went by. And then this fall, I was like, okay, I need to go do this because winter is coming and I'm going to sit on the couch a lot more. And it's really going to mess up my back. So I need to go and do it now. So I went, and they didn't have anything that was this size and had all the you can't just get the lumbar. You got if you're getting the electronics, it's just all, there's literally charge ports on the side of this thing. It's crazy. They didn't have it, so I had to custom order it. So I do that, and I'm like, okay, this is very expensive. Whatever, I'll pay for it. And they're like, okay, great, thank you very much. It'll be 8 to 10 weeks till they make it, and then we will call you and have it delivered. And I was like, oh. So I'll be getting this, if I'm lucky, late January, maybe early February, maybe mid-February. Well, shit. But, I mean, what's the alternative?
Yeah, right.
And then for some reason, I don't know, like 2-3 weeks later, they're like, we got it. You want it delivered? And I said, yes. And so this week has largely been really, I mean, it's been stressful for a lot of reasons, but one of the big ones was cleaning out the old couch, figuring out how to get it out of here, finding somebody who will take it, because they will not take the old stuff. They make it very clear. And then getting this delivered. And yesterday, it was delivered. And now it is here. And the things that it does, obviously the back, up and down, like a recliner. And there's a feet thing, up and down, like a recliner. And then, as you saw, I think, the headrest changes.
Oh.
And like, this is very uncomfortable. But if I was reclined back, it would help me.
Yeah, it'd help you.
My head be up. And it basically, I have a travel neck pillow that I often use. This pretty much replaces it. I don't need that anymore. And then that lumbar support, which is awesome.
Nice.
So, and this lovely blue that I picked out of the colors that were available and that were doable on this particular model and that were anti-scratch resistant. So I had limited choices, but I like this one.
Nice.
It's a nice blue. I don't know how it comes through on there.
It's sort of blue, yeah.
It's not a navy. It's not a. I call this maybe a midnight blue. That feels about right to me. But yeah, I like that. So here I am now. And so far, it's weird. I like it. I like it very much. And it's very comfortable. But I don't know if you've experienced this, especially if you have old, worn furniture. Even if it's fucked up, even if it's busted and it's not supporting you, and if you sit on it too long, things hurt, your body is used to it if it's the place you sit. And now this is supporting me in totally different ways, and my body is not used to it. So, like, it was very nice. And then last night I was like, wow, I got some sore bits in place just because I'm not used to sitting this. But now I am getting there, and it is so much more supportive, and it is incredibly comfortable, and probably the last chair I will buy, because the couch, which was way less sturdy and fancy than this, lasted 20 some years, so I would imagine this will last that long or longer. So, and I'll be very old then. So now I have the couch. I don't yet have side tables, and this is a very big problem, so I am working on that. So at the moment, this is just on my knee. I can bounce it around. Hopefully, maybe not by the next two episodes, because I think we're probably going to end up doing a double next week. So it may be a few weeks, but eventually this will change again as I get. So I'm hoping to get one of those that like slides out, like that'll go across, like a desk kind of thing, because then I could type and podcast, and that would be nice. But my preliminary shopping experience broke my brain on that, so we will see how that goes.
Your camera does pretty good with colors. Mine doesn't. I mean, you know what color this hat is. It's not gray.
Well, whatever camera you have downstairs sucks.
Well, that's just my
Yeah. The upstairs, whatever you've got on the upstairs, pretty good.
It's just this still.
Why does it suck down here? It doesn't suck upstairs.
Maybe it's the lighting.
Yeah, and I mean, that could become the very stark white.
Yeah.
Does some of it. Well, I have to hook you up.
This is a very attractive blue, light blue hat.
This is a very denim blue.
But it's gray in the camera.
Yeah, No. You're completely washed out.
And this is a maroon, I would call it, but it's kind of it's really a brick red, but it looks.
No, it's gray. Know. It's very gray.
Yeah.
And you look white. And as we all know, you were found on the streets as a baby in Ghana. So.
I don't know what the problem is with this camera down here.
I think it's the room. We got to get. We'll get you a green screen thing in the back or something. Any day now, we're really going to up the production values.
Well,
this whole setup.
It probably won't be long before I can just do it in the room. In my office, like I have been. This is like the downstairs, whatever. And then it'll just be what
I still
look like. What
think
it
we
before.
Should do it in person from your actual office, but you're not down with that for some reason. I'm assuming it's a work-life balance, setting boundaries thing, but I think that would be awesome.
It's more of a. I don't know how clients would feel about their therapy space being like put out on the internet. You know what I'm saying?
Is something I hadn't considered that I think is probably insane and probably only a thing that would bug you. But I am not confident enough to try and convince you otherwise, because if I'm wrong, that would be very bad. So, works
hard
for me.
To say. Hard to say.
I will say that the risk of that decision and the possible consequence of that decision is significant enough that I would not push the issue. But I do think it's probably all in your brain. You should start doing that when you first meet a client. It's like, also, are you okay if this space is used in a podcast? Because that could be a thing. We usually are up against that wall. Want to sit in this chair. No one will see the wall behind where you sit. See, that's the problem. As soon as you imagine trying to explain it to a client, it gets ridiculous. But as I said, fine. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world where one of the hosts is secretly enacting a plan to destroy the world in a cleansing fire, and the other of the hosts is secretly a Babadook. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 718. I can never figure out which one I am when you do that.
No, that's my favorite. That's why I do so many of these ones, because I love watching you try and be like, so which one is me? So you should know this, and if you don't, you're a bad person. But the Babadook has become something of a queer icon.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a thing. And I've known this for a while because, again, I am a good person. What I didn't know until recently is the reason that happened. I thought it had something to do with the symbolism built into the Babadook and metaphor for grief, and that somehow tied into the journey of coming out or whatever. No. Apparently, when the Babadook came out on Netflix, it was erroneously classified as an LGBTQ+ film, which it is not. But apparently that sort of took off as a meme and then became a thing. And so now the Babadook is a queer icon. You will see representations of the Babadook at pride parades and all sorts of stuff. But I mean, just recently learned that's why.
I mean, I knew the Wizard of Oz, particularly the film version, was like...
Yeah, the Friends of Dorothy and
all that. Yeah, I knew that. But I never heard that about the Babadook.
Have you seen the Babadook?
Yeah, I should see it again, though, because I don't remember much about it. I remember it being good, but I don't remember anything else.
I think it was very original for the time. I don't know there's a ton to it otherwise. And also, it's one of those where it doesn't look as original now because everybody has fucking. Like, nowadays, every movie monster is a metaphor for something. And some of them often were before, but now it's like, oh, that's what it's got to be. It's all got to be, you know, every horror must be elevated, which.
But it's not a made up thing, is it? I mean, isn't it tied to to folklore? Or is it a made up thing?
I don't know the origin of the actual Babadook, or if there
Okay.
is an actual Babadook. I
Okay.
don't
I didn't think it was like the Slender Man or something like that. I thought it was based
No,
on
as far as
something.
not a creepypasta or anything like that, but I don't know if it has folkloric origins or if it is just wholly made up for the movie.
For that film, okay. I'll have to look that up. I thought it was, but I'll have to check again.
Maybe. Could be. It's funny the number of memes that I know just from Jordan breeding video edits. I don't often know the context of them, but I just know certain memes. And I found frequently I say, maybe. And it's a take from Tom Holland in one of the Spider-Man movies. He said, there's a couple of various things where the meme is essentially, I don't think so, but maybe. And I have seen it enough that now I find that when I say maybe unintentionally, it come that tone comes out. And I sound like Tom Holland.
Okay.
It's fair. So it's just been a normal, it's been a week. How's your week been?
Good. In December, I like to sometimes just spend time listening to Christmas music and watching old Christmas cartoons and stuff. It's nostalgic for me because when I was growing up, things like the Charlie Brown thing and the Rankin and Bass stuff was kind of new. Some of it was really new. Like some of it came out when I was like 5, 6, 7 years old. Some of it came out like in 65 or 64, so a little older than me, but not much. So that was the time when all that stuff was coming out brand new, and it was always really exciting to in December when you're sitting there watching television with the family. Now, we never had cable, but in the 70s nobody did. And you're watching one of the three networks or PBS or whatever, and you don't really know what's going to come on. I mean, we had a TV guide, but we didn't really look at it necessarily to know what was going to be on that night or whatever. And we watched the stuff that all Americans, I think, were watching at that time. We talked about it last time, like All in the Family and the Jeffersons and Good Times and stuff like that. And then suddenly, every network had their own little 2 or 3 second thing that said, a special or a cartoon special or holiday special was going to be airing instead of the usual shows that would be at that time. And so it was kind of a fun surprise. It's like, oh, they're going to show a Christmas special or whatever. And then you'd see Charlie Brown or you'd see whatever. Yes, I know.
I'm
And
listening. I love this chair. I love these chairs.
So there's a few selected things from back then that I watch because it just takes me right back to the fun of watching them and kind of being surprised by how there was going to be a special on that night. The Grinch Who Stole Christmas, we watched that one too.
Did you watch my favorite? The is it Life and Times? Is it the one, the pagan one?
Well, so Rankin and Bass did a one that was based on Baum's story of Santa Claus. I think that's what you're talking about.
Okay, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know where to
There is
find
one
that.
in which all the great powers that be, emceed by the great Ack,
Yeah.
discuss the life of Santa Claus and whether he should be granted the mantle of immortality.
Yeah.
And in this version, Santa is raised by lions.
Yeah, that's the L. Frank Baum story that Rankin and Bass
Okay.
adapted into their thing. And then they
I
did a
didn't
different
know that.
origin of Santa Claus called Santa Claus is Coming to Town, the
Oh, I
animated.
mean, they've done several different origins of Santa Claus.
So, no, I haven't seen that one. I don't know where to find it. I think a lot of that stuff is on Max.
One as a kid, before I even considered the religious implications, I just liked because it had fairies and shit in it. But when I got older, I'm like, wow, this man, the 70s. We think of, in general, censorship and standards and practices and rules as lessening over time, because now you can hear people say shit on network television. But there's some stuff in the 70s that like just couldn't, that that is subversive in a way that it couldn't be made now. There's a, I've talked about this before, I think. There is an episode of the animated Star Trek show in which they go to a planet of witches and solve some issues involving witchcraft. And at the end, it turns out that the witch who helped them, this guy, is actually Satan, but he's like a good guy. But his name is Satan. Like, it's a whole thing. Like shit that you just couldn't do now. And that always weirds me out, how, like, in some ways, we have more censorship on our television than we used to. You can show some butts, and you can say some bad words, but a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I remember in college deciding that I should, like, watch some films that were celebrated from the 70s that I never got to see because I was just a kid, and being really surprised by what was in them based on, because I had the impression that, like, I saw, you know, late 80s and early 90s films, and I thought, well, they're more permissive than 70s films were, but they were not. They absolutely were not. I was really surprised by what passed for, I mean, I guess PG back then, and in the, if even, I don't know when they started doing that, but you know, like,
I don't know that television had ratings back in the day, but.
Well, but I mean, I'm thinking of films that I was trying to catch up on.
Well,
I know,
yeah,
really popular.
Having just watched Airplane again, like, there was a time, I mean, it was a time before PG-13 existed, where PG movies could have a little bit of nudity.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And yeah, what's funny is PG-13 came out and suddenly neither PG nor PG-13 could have that.
Yeah, yeah. That was ours. Restricted,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, still is.
But, I mean, you know, I think of, for some reason, I've been seeing promotions for Blazing Saddles. It must be, it's like, I don't know, 40th or 50th anniversary or some such thing. And I saw that on television when I was a kid, which was heavily edited, which I didn't know. And when I was in college, some friend of mine said, hey, let's watch Blazing Saddles. I said, oh, yeah, let's do that. And I was shocked. Shocked. I mean, this was in 1988. I was shocked by all the stuff that's, you know, the N-word and all this other stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I was like, holy cow, I can't believe that this is what this movie's really like. Because even though I was seeing it on television heavily edited, it was new. I mean, it was came out in the 70s, right? So people were going to the theater and seeing this, what I was seeing in 88, and I couldn't believe it. You know, because where I was raised, that the N-word was like worse than any other word. Like, you could say the F-word and not get punished as bad as saying the N-word when I was growing up. And I know people talk about how, oh, but when grandpa told a racist joke, everybody laughed. Not in my family. Grandpa got scolded in my family for telling a racist joke. So I was really shocked by it when I saw Blazing Saddles for the first time. And I didn't realize that was what film entertainment looked like in the 70s and part of the 80s when I was growing up. And so recently I've seen it promoted. I guess, like I say, it's some anniversary or something. And I'm like, are people going to be okay with this? Because it's pretty, I don't know. Like, if I was shocked in 88, I'd be totally shocked now, I think.
I mean, some people aren't going to like it, but they wouldn't have liked it then either.
Mm-hmm.
I think there is something. Well, I mean, and this is the thing with the old movies. If they haven't aged well, you have two options. You're like, I'm done. Don't need to see it again.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're like, I watch it. and appreciate the bits that I think are good and acknowledge the bits that aren't. And honestly, there's a point to a lot of what's going on in Blazing Saddles. Like, Blazing Saddles is meant to be, in many ways, anti-racist.
Yes,
in a lot of, and to lampoon racism, as it were. Correct. But it does so with some very explicit things and other stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, I think people will just be aware of what it. I am confident somewhere out there is a TikTok talking about, oh my God, how can they do it? Like, people are going to be offended if they want to be offended, but a lot of people are also going to be like, yeah, wow, shit was way different in the 70s, wasn't it? And also, I guarantee you, you can see some other comedies from the 70s that were not lampooning racism that had just as much of that stuff, and you'd be like, oh, no, thank you. No, no, no.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I, yes, there's a lot about Blazing Saddles that is sort of shocking in a modern day, and a lot that I'm like, it's just not funny. But a lot of it is really stuff that even nowadays is kind of progressive. There's a lot of messaging in there that is very interesting to me, and I'm so sad we lost Cleavon Little as early as we did. Cleavon Little as an elder statesman actor. I thought he was really good in that.
But yeah, there was basically just been doing all that old. we watched some new stuff too, like Spirited.
Hot Frosty. You watched Hot Frosty.
What? What's that?
Oh God, I forget how completely out of the zeitgeist you are. So, you know Hallmark Christmas movies?
Yeah.
And everybody makes fun of them, but everybody watches them and they make a ton of money. So a lot of other streaming services are getting on this, and Netflix in particular is making a shit ton of movies that you're like, is this a Hallmark Christmas movie? No, it's Netflix. And the big one this year is everybody's talking about is Hot Frosty, which is, it's a retelling of Frosty the Snowman as a rom-com. And the snowman is super fucking hot and everybody thinks he's super sexy.
The snowman.
Yes, yes, because for some reason, the snowman, there's a snow sculpting contest in the town square or whatever, and our heroine is widowed a year ago, and she's very sad, and a friend says, you need to find love again, because your husband died like a whole year ago, so what the fuck? And she gives her this scarf that she thinks will be lucky, and she goes out, and in amongst the traditional sort of snowmen and cartoonish ice sculptures and things, or snow sculptures, is a very detailed, very realistic, very naked, very hot male snowman. And she whimsically and sadly puts the scarf on him and leaves, and he comes to life. And it's in such poor taste, it's amazing. But apparently, it's kind of an entertaining movie. Like, people are kind of enjoying it. Because this is a problem with all the Hallmark style movies. None of them are good. None of them are remotely good. But some of them are fun. I mean, some of them are fun, ironically. But some of them are just, whatever. I mean, they're rom-coms, you know, whatever. But yeah, that's the thing. And they called it Hot Frosty, which 100% sounds like a thing you look up on Urban Dictionary. But yeah, it's out there. I haven't seen it, but I have seen a lot of people talking about it. And I feel like I know the whole plot now. So that's not one of the ones you watched.
Ironically, Abby and I are both fans of the Rankin and Bass 2D animated Frosty the Snowman from the 70s. But it's been hard to find. Like, we used to look for DVDs with it and everything. And again, as irony would have it, while this thing is happening and I'm completely unaware, Max, I think Max finally had it. And we watched it just the other day, with, oh my, I'm drawn a blank on the guy that is like narrating it and singing it. Shoot.
It's not Burl Ives, I assume, because the
no,
other
no, no, no,
Burl
no.
Ives.
It's I can't believe I can't remember his name. Anyway.
Oh, is it Fred Astaire?
No. That's Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Santa Claus is Coming to Town.
Okay,
I know all the other ones.
It's the guy. Shoot. Anyhow. And it's probably been decades since I'd seen it. And you know, it was fun to watch it again. And again, a big shot of nostalgia, but I didn't know that this was happening.
The storyline is remarkably similar. Instead of Magic Hat, it's Magic Scarf. Instead of evil, selfish magician, it's this cop, because the snowman accidentally like breaks the glass on a store and puts on some clothes because he's naked and all this the first night he's there. And there's this cop who throughout is trying to track down who did this. And like even the bit with the greenhouse and the magician, like the cop finally arrests him and puts him in a jail cell and it's too warm in there. And he starts to like, he doesn't melt, but he's going to die. Like, it's remarkably similar to the storyline.
What's the woman who's mourning her husband? What's her name?
Lacey Chabert, who was in Mean Girls and also 1,000 of these Hallmark.
What's her character's name?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay. Well, because there's a little girl in Frosty the Snowman.
Her name is Lacey Chabert. That's all.
Karen. And it's like, I wonder if the character's name is Karen. Probably not. It's not a very popular name to give characters these days.
Less so. Yeah.
Nope. I won't be watching that one. But we watched Spirited, that musical. That's pretty good. And
oh yeah, I've been thinking about watching that. I've heard it's fine.
Yeah, so it's fun. And Claus.
We watched Die Hard the other night. Speaking of Christmas movies,
see, we don't usually watch that at Christmas. Even though, yes, I do agree, it's a Christmas movie, but we don't usually watch it. Was it good? Was
Trish
it good?
Trish just opted to. It's solid. It's a solid movie. The messaging is very 80s action movie. Yeah. So I'm still a little confused about Reginald Veld Johnson's arc where his character eventually learns to kill again, and we think this is a good thing, but you know. But overall, yeah, it's a decent movie.
Maybe we'll watch
holds
that.
Up,
I don't
holds
know.
Up.
But I like to sort of watch them early because I'm always afraid that something will happen where I won't get to watch them at all. But I specifically want to watch It's a Wonderful Life on the solstice, because that's just what I do. Well, that'll be hard this year because the solstice is on Saturday and we're going back to the farm. But like when we get back that night, we'll probably watch It's a Wonderful Life on the solstice.
Watch it on your phone in bits.
And Miracle on 34th Street, the original black and white version, we like to watch on Christmas Eve. Otherwise, we just like squeeze in this film and that film. Elf is another one we watch. I probably didn't start watching that until 15 years after it first came out. But when I finally watched it, I really liked it. So
The pitch meeting at Ryan George did a pitch meeting for Elf recently.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
It's really
good.
But
it wouldn't have meant anything to you, but he's talking about the scene in the park with all the extras and stuff. And he's like, there's some police there. And also Josh Rubin is there. And then they cut to zooming in on one guy's face.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Rubin is an actor and comedian that I know from a lot of Dropout stuff. And actually he's slowly making his way as an actor into horror films that I'm really enjoying. But yeah, that's definitely him in that shot. So apparently he was just an extra in Elf and I never knew. So that was very weird for me. And also Ryan George knows who he is. So it was just weird to be like, yeah. And then I always love when like YouTubers and streamers that I follow, like apparently know each other. Like, they don't collaborate, but they just, like, know each other. So that was very weird for me. I was like, holy shit, Josh Rubin was an Elf? Guess so.
Yeah.
I also found out one of the Dropout people was in a Hallmark Christmas movie. Well, a Hallmark holiday movie from a couple years ago in which she is stuck in a time loop at her parents' Hanukkah parade. Sorry, their parents' Hanukkah parade. So as a throwaway gag in an episode of Make Some Noise, they mentioned it. And now I looked it up. I'm like, holy shit, this is real. So I'm going to have to check that out. Cause I love them. And the idea of them in a Hallmark holiday movie cracks me up. So,
you know, what I'm thinking of just now that I forgot about was a year or so ago, they started making the Santa Claus, you know, the with the.
Oh, yes. The Santa Clauses.
Yeah, yeah. They started making a TV. Didn't they? They made a streaming TV show, didn't they?
They did. They made a 6-episode series.
Which I did watch.
I watched half of it because my mother-in-law really wanted to watch it, so I brought home the Roku. But there were only 3 episodes out at the time. I think it was at Thanksgiving, and we never came back to it. But I had to be in the room because that's where I sit when I'm visiting.
I didn't hate it. I thought they were going to make more, and maybe they did, and I haven't seen them. Maybe I'll have to look that up.
I hate the Santa Claus movies. I consider them genuinely disturbing horror films. I hate Tim Allen, both personally and professionally. And I hated this idea. And from what I saw of it, it was awful. So I'm in a very different camp on the Santa Claus.
Well, I mean, because of how much I enjoyed Christmas entertainment when I was growing up, I give a lot of even newer entertainment a pass. There are things I can totally not like about it, but like if there's anything I can like about it at all, like in those shows, I'm also not a huge Tim Allen fan at all, but there were so many other things I liked. I liked the set designs. I liked the costuming. I thought was really good. A lot of the other actors, I really appreciated their performances. I thought the story would be absolutely terrible. It wasn't good, but it wasn't absolutely terrible. So I could appreciate that a little bit. But yeah, that's so, you know, it was fine. It was fine. We watched them all, but you know, clearly.
I've been running into this. For some reason, it's just really registering for me this year. But I'm very open that I hate the holidays. I've talked about this many times. See? That right there. I said I hate the holidays, and you did a little smirk. People hear me say that, and they think I'm kidding or I'm being glib.
Oh, no, I know you're not. That.
No. If Thanksgiving and Christmas just didn't happen, I would be demonstrably happier.
Right. I mean, I had a little moment of humor there because I know this about you, and it's pretty humorous sometimes when you're talking about it.
It's just, I don't, well, because I can make it funny, but it's, yeah. I mean, there are some very serious and genuine reasons, which everybody else understands, and they're I'm okay with that.
That's true.
And I'm just not. But like, this is the year I've really noticed people like, oh, you're Grinch, Ebenezer Scrooge. No, I genuinely think they suck and wish they didn't happen.
Yeah.
For a lot of very, like, genuine, not because, you know, a mall Santa fondled me as a kid, or not because,
oh my God.
Not because my dad got stuck in a chimney and we didn't find out until the smell happened. Fucking Gremlins. Jeez. Somebody brought that one up again, the Phoebe Cates monologue in Gremlins. Why does that exist?
Oh, my God.
That is amazing. That is one of my favorite parts of the holidays, is the Phoebe Cates Gremlin monologue, because it's just out of fucking nowhere and then immediately dropped. It's like a scene from a different movie that just got stuck in the middle. And it's especially good because she's telling the story to our hero, who is very actively not paying attention the whole time. It's not because any of that. I've talked about this before. It's about there's everybody likes the holidays because it's all these nice things, and I hate it because it's being forced to do all these nice things and being obligated and the sense of respect. Guess what? You're not getting shit from me for Christmas this year. Do you know why? You know why. You know what you did. No. Because I didn't think of anything that I'm like, that would be cool for William. And I'll be fucked if I'm just going to then get you a gift card to Amazon. Like, no, you are not in a situation where I am forced and like, I know you're going to get me something or whatever. So I'm only going to get you something if I come up with something that's cool. And honestly, if I come up with something that's cool and it's not Christmas time, I'm going to just get it for you. I didn't come up with anything this year. Spoilers, you're not getting anything. Too bad. But like, But no, I actually really love that I can do that with you and not worry about it. And also know that if you got me something, I would be comfortable still not getting you anything.
Yeah.
And I hope if I did get you something, you would be comfortable not getting me anything.
Yeah.
And I love that. That's how I want gifts to be. That you give gifts because you want to give gifts, not because you feel obligated to give gifts.
Yeah, and my whole family's like that. We don't really get each other anything, but sometimes it happens. Sometimes someone shows up and says, hey, I saw this really cool thing, so I got it for you. You know, and nobody's like, oh my gosh, you didn't get me anything, or oh, I didn't get you anything. It's just like, oh, that's cool. They open it, it's done. Most of the time, there isn't anything exchanged, but when there is, it's no big deal. And that's just how it's always
been. My family is like that in Oregon. They still sort of do gifts. But often it's some cheap, stupid thing just so somebody has something to open. And they a little bit spoil the younger one a little bit because she's still young and whatever.
Yeah, we're getting things for the kids. But
my in-laws, every person there will get a gift for every person there.
Oh.
And just I have friends that if I get them a gift – they will feel really bad they didn't get me anything. And the next time I see them after Christmas, they will have gotten me something. And sometimes it's cool, but sometimes it really smacks of, this was the best I could think. I knew I had to get you something. No, you don't.
No.
If you feel you have to get me something because I got you something, that gift is not significant to me. You didn't do it because you wanted to. You did it because you felt you had to. Same thing with all the family get together and stuff. Seeing family, great. Seeing family because you are required to see family, not great.
No, yeah, I agree with that.
And there are tons, not only do I personally dislike it, but I know so many people who suffer under these mechanisms. Ooh. And some of them suffer unknowingly. Some of them just think that is literally how it is and this is supposed to be a good thing. Like some of them are, but I mean, the strain and the stress on people all the time. There are chunks of this town we won't visit from November to January because they are so packed with people doing all the shopping. Mm. It's nuts. I hate it. I hate all of it. It's a terrible idea.
Mm.
Who came up with this shit? Jesus? Fuck off. Wouldn't that make a fun episode title?
Well, you know, what's funny about all of these old Christmas specials going clear back to Miracle on 34th Street, which was, I want to say 1940 something. You know, they complain about the commercialization of the holiday, right? Like that's one of the things that in Miracle on 34th Street, the reason Santa is out doing stuff and in the world is to see if anybody really cares or if anyone, he's looking for Christmas spirit, I guess. And that becomes a trope in a lot of these stories is there any Christmas spirit or is it just a bunch of commercialism? Elf has that a lot. So yeah, this whole idea of Christmas not being what you're talking about, where people are getting together because they want to get together. People are giving gifts if they can. And if they can't, it's not a big deal. And, you know, because in a way what you're talking about, when a person gets you a gift later, it kind of retroactively takes away from what you did for them, right? Because you did it for them just because you wanted to. And now they've turned it into something transactional that it wasn't when you did it, right? And so it kind of takes away from that. So there's a lot of, in these specials, there's a lot of Christmas is supposed to be exactly what you're saying, but it's been changed from that because of commercialism or, you know, being obsessed with gifts and expensive gifts and getting and outdoing each other with giving a gift or getting a gift, or a kid just wanting gifts and not caring about, you know, gratitude or humility or anything like that. So that's a pretty common theme in these stories.
And often by the end, the resolution where they all found the true meaning of Christmas or whatever still has a lot of this bullshit in it. this reciprocity obligation stuff. And I'm just in general, and this is a milder thing because I understand people have hectic lives and maybe they need a reminder or whatever, but I'm like, so what about just spirit? Like not Christmas spirit. What about these principles that we establish? You just do them And it doesn't have to be because it's a certain time of year.
Right, right. That's often talked about in these stories too. It's like
it's referenced, but then nothing concrete comes
out
of it.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And so just this it's I have this with a lot of things. I have this with a lot, and this probably goes back to I'm not a joiner, I'm not a group member, I'm not a community member. But anytime it's like forced love, like you gotta love people now. This is the time of year where it is required. It would be super awesome if you would love people all the time, but this is the time where we all agree now we're going to love each other. Do it. And you living in this society are going to look like a huge asshole if you don't do it right now also. And no one will give a shit if you did it the previous 11 months. If you don't do it now, you're Scrooge, you're a humbug, you're whatever. And I do it, and it's fine. And I do cool the United Way family thing. We had two families this year. And that's been very cool. And again, it's like and also I think at this point we spend more on those families than we do on everyone else in the world. And I like that. Although this year it's crazy because all these charities are running around trying to do stuff, so getting the stuff delivered. I've had one family just filling up the back seat of my car floor to ceiling for over a week because there was some confusion about when and the place where it's going to get delivered. Nobody's there. And then I feel bad for all these charities that are suffering and underworking, which means I should volunteer. I know that. I don't got no fucking job. I don't got no fucking excuse. But yeah, I just, but I've realized recently that like people are just like, oh, you, this is silly. No, this is a real thing. Merry Christmas!
This is technically our Christmas episode because when this is out,
yeah,
it's gonna be the last one before Christmas. Is that right?
Yes, because Christmas is on a Wednesday, so literally the day after Christmas we'll have another one.
Yeah.
And this one is gonna fall on.
But I mean, I've just had the 19th. Some of my best memories are in the winter time and in Christmas time and things. So, I mean, I can't help
it. I mean, it doesn't help that I don't like winter, but.
I can't help but feel nostalgic about it. And my whole life, my family, and I've been saying this and a lot of stories, you know, say this, it's like, this is an attitude you'd have all year round. And my family tried, you know, we did volunteer stuff all year. We were visiting nursing homes. We were doing paper drives. We were doing, food drives. We were doing all this stuff all the time. It wasn't just at Christmas time, but we were very grateful for the holiday season in terms of, because right or wrong, far more people were in a giving mood to like donate food, donate stuff during that time of year. And it, you know, it was bittersweet because it's like, Why can't you people do this all year? People are in need all year long, but it was also good because, well, we're getting this stuff. And some of it would even tide us over for several months into the next year if it wasn't like perishable or whatever. So, you know, as someone who you know, I was involved with the church growing up and they took very seriously being out in the community and helping people in need. We were doing that all year round. And at this time of year, it was nice for people to be in that mood. It was sad they weren't all year, but it was helpful to get this big push of maybe clothes or non-perishable items that, you know, and could tide you over even to the summer. So, I mean, that was a positive experience I had about this time of year and people feeling and giving.
I've done that. I remember volunteering at a food pantry at Thanksgiving and people were super like, that was a great experience. And here's the thing. If you love the holiday, if one, I'm not talking to you specifically, if a person loves the holidays, that's great. That's wonderful. There's a whole social mechanism built in there for you. Enjoy it. Have fun. Carols, movies, family, food, the music, the whatever. Great. But if you don't, or if you do, but there are certain things that you're like, I don't really want to do this, but I have to. Fuck that noise.
Well,
it's not love and caring and kindness if you don't want to, but you feel pressured to.
I agree with that 100%. It's also problematic this time of year when you have people who don't have a lot of family or have had bad family experiences. And so they're getting a lot of this messaging about family and loved ones, and they're, you know, by themselves, or a loved one, they just got a divorce, or their loved one just passed away. And it can be very painful. This is for mental health. This is one of the hardest times of the year, for sure. For sure.
For a lot of reasons, but yeah.
For a lot of reasons that some of what you're saying and some other types of circumstances and stresses.
There is a comedian I really love from the UK named Sarah Millican. And I think she came up with this, but on Christmas Day, she and her husband do like a early morning presents and all that kind of shit. And she spends most of her day online because, and I cannot remember it, I'm very sad about this, but there's some particular hashtag that they just use on social media, and people get on and talk, and it's mostly people who sort of don't have anyone to talk to, so they can all talk. And apparently it's hugely kind and helpful for a lot of people. And so she just spends all day on the couch just talking with people who sort of don't have, like, their family's not there, or they don't have any family, or they're just lonely or whatever. And so they spend Christmas Day together online, just sort of chatting back and forth. And she's not the only one. There's lots of people who sort of volunteer to do this.
Nice.
But I always thought that was kind of neat.
That is nice.
I have recently found the joy of what I call my treat boxes, which there are certain groups and people who I either actively want to, or I kind of feel I need to do something and I don't normally do something, but people that I want to, I go to the various international groceries and just buy weird snacks is some of my favorite shit to do anyway. And I just send them to the people, and there's no presents. There's nothing that like was picked out for them necessarily. It's just some fun snacks and shit. I do some, like my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, does not like chocolate. And so he frequently gets fucked over when it comes to treats in general. So I will often try and pick out things that aren't chocolate for him and stuff like that. But I also do that other times of year as well. But I do, that's fun. I like doing that. And that's a new thing I sort of invented. But
We have not talked about your week.
We haven't talked about shit except Christmas, which is probably appropriate. We're almost out of time. I had a lot of movies to talk about because I've seen some doozies lately. I'm only going to talk about one because it is kind of time sensitive.
Okay.
And then the others I will save because I have a notes app, which is that kind of thing. So there is a film. It is currently on Netflix. It is going away December 31st, which is why I bring it up now. Huh. And some of you are going to know this already. And I even know some of you, I know specifically, will know this already. I recently watched The Last Dragon. To look at The Last Dragon, you would think it is a parody of 80s martial arts inner city blaxploitation kind of action movies. Except it was made in 1985.
So this is what those parodies would parody.
It ain't parodying shit.
I mean, I've heard of this movie, but I haven't seen it.
It is a comedy. Like, it intends to be funny in places, but there's a lot of it that does not. And it is aggressively 80s. Like, in the middle of the movie, you just get most of the music video of Rhythm of the Night by DeBarge. Just in the middle, because one of the set pieces is like an old sort of like American Bandstand show, and so they just play it, but they play like most of the video. It also has an amazing soundtrack made up of copycats, the main theme, which is very like, it has the wording where you're like, it was made for this movie because it makes is clearly trying to be Duran Duran. There's another song in it that for a second I was like, is this actually Steve Perry and Journey? No, it's somebody trying their hardest to sound like Steve Perry and Journey in again, similar sort of songs. It is the story of a young black man in Harlem who does martial arts and is really kind of obsessed with it, and also just obsessed with like acting Asian. Like, he wears a big straw hat and he eats his food with chopsticks and shit for no particular reason. And it is sort of his journey of trying to find the ultimate level and the his master. He's progressed beyond his master, according to his master. So he needs to find a new master. And that's a whole deal. But meanwhile, he crosses path with and slowly sort of falls in love with this host of an American Bandstand sort of show, played by Vanity, like Prince's girlfriend Vanity, who is really slumming it. Although I looked at, I was like, did she have much career after like Purple Rain and shit? And she did sort of, but she also died in 2016, which makes me sad. But yeah, she's in this.
Well, I didn't know she died.
And a few other people you'd recognize, but at least by face. And also there is this. He's a rich bad guy. He says something about being the king of video games, but like no video game is ever mentioned or played or anything in this movie. He's trying to break into pop music and he's using his nefarious ways to do that. And then also this other, I guess, gang leader whose name is Shonuff, the Shogun of Harlem. And his whole thing is he does martial arts and he really wants our protagonist to fight him, but our protagonist will not throughout the movie because you don't fight if you don't have to.
Now, was there a movie trailer, fake movie trailers or whatever.
Honest trailers.
Honest trailer. I think there was an honest trailer about this recently because this all sounds really familiar.
I don't think it was recent because I don't think I saw it. But I tend to see all of those. But I don't know.
Yeah.
And also his like 12-year-old little brother is also in love with Vanity, and that creates some conflict. But just like weird shit. Like, I'll give you a great example.
Okay.
The evil rich bad guy has a tank with a man eating some sort of fish in it. This is a cliche. He's got piranhas or so, and you don't know what it is because you never actually see it. Here's the extent of it. In his office, there is a tank. And when we are first introduced, one of his henchmen reaches into a freezer full of various meats and pulls out a big haunch of something, sticks it in the tank, which is cloudy. You can't see what's in there. Sticks it in. Bubbles happen. He takes it out. It's just bone. Standard introduction of piranha tank thing.
Right.
Later, during a fight scene, someone grabs rich guy by the neck and forces him to the tank and shoves his head in the water just for a second and comes back out and it's wet and he's terrified, but he didn't get bit or anything. Never comes up again. This tank with this man eating that, those two things are the entirety of this tank of man eating something. There's just this movie. I was constantly in my brain going, why'd they do that? Why did they make that acting choice? Why did they write that line of dialogue? Why is this plot point this way? Why did they set this part in this? Mm-hmm. Why is, like, the whole movie, I'm just like, why? And then why? But it is hella entertaining. It is a wicked fun time. And I was stone cold sober when I watched this.
Wow.
It is a blast. It makes no sense. I also think it has some pretty decent martial arts in it. Either that or people who are pretty good at gymnastics pretending it's martial arts. It has some really cool physical action scenes. I'll put it that way. But it's it's nonsense and it's hilarious. And some of it is hilarious on purpose and some of it is not hilarious on purpose. It's also weirdly racist in that 80s way, but nothing too explicit or anything. It hasn't aged great in a lot of ways, actually, and its take on women hasn't aged great either, but yeah, this is a fun time. So yeah, The Last Dragon, it is currently on Netflix, but it is going away December 31st, so I thought I would mention that to everyone.
Okay.
I know some people know because back in the Happy Jacks RPG forum days, which is where a lot of our listeners came from when we started the show, one of the regular contributors there, Shonuff, was like his forum icon. And as soon as he showed up on the screen, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy. But the whole thing is very much like Black Dynamite, which is, if you haven't seen Black Dynamite, Black Dynamite is a parody of old blaxploitation movies and is one of the finest pieces of film I've ever seen in my life. It cracks me up. So it is hilarious. And this feels like that, except it was actually made in the 80s.
Yeah, right.
And it's just, it's so 80s. It's so 80s. The outfits are amazing. Yeah, so check that out. All right, the rest of them I will save because this was about the holidays. So to all of you out there, I want to wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy Hanukkah and a Happy Kwanzaa and a Happy Yule, a Happy whatever the Pastafarians are into, and a Happy not having to deal with that shit if you don't have to deal with that shit. Tune in next week, and it'll be after that shit, and so then other things will happen. So good night and good luck.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.